Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back veterinarian Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital for the latest edition of Pets and Vets. If you have a question about doggy or kitty or whatever, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Whatever in reason, of course. If you have an elephant, probably she's not going to help you, but you never know. 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. And the number, once again, 800-348-2551. You got a pet? We got a vet. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us. Your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets today. Here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell. She joined the Animal Hospital in Del Mar, better known as the Del Mar Animal Hospital, in 1998. You got a question about kitty or doggy? Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Try to be concise in your emails, but detailed enough that we can get the gist of the question. 12 paragraphs? Nah, it's a non-starter. 800-348-2551 is the number, and the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, welcome back.
Hello. It's lovely to be back.
We got so wrapped up just now in our discussion about the New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers that we almost didn't realize the show was about to begin. You're not a big proponent of this Aaron Rodgers to the Jets,
right? I'm not. But I'll survive. There are other New York teams.
Yeah, the New York football giants, right? Oh, you're talking about the Bills. All right, anything you want to touch upon? We have a bunch of emails already here. We have callers on the line. Is there anything that you would like to discuss?
I'm good to go.
All right, we have a very long email from Jen, who said she's hoping to get through by phone, and I can see she's on line one. So let's go to Jen now and dispense with the 17-paragraph email. Jennifer, you're on.
Hi, I'm sorry for the long email. I needed to make sure that I got all the information
gotcha.
Out there.
Yep.
So my cat is 9 years old, and he was just diagnosed with early stage kidney disease. And this was 4 months ago. The vet put him on a prescription diet, and the diet is advanced care, which kind of concerned me since he's in the early stages. But I've tried all of the tricks that I know of to get him to try to eat the food. And at first it was successful, and now he walks up to the bowl, he sniffs it. He doesn't like what he smells, he walks away. He waits for the add-ins that I've been putting into it. And sometimes the meal time will take up to 30 minutes to get him to eat a quarter of a can from a 5.5-ounce can. And I'm wondering if there's anything else that I can do, because I know that he has to eat the whole can of food, otherwise he's going to continue to lose weight. Right now he's at 10 pounds, and he's been going down a couple of ounces every week.
Yeah.
Is there some other kind of diet that I can do for him, other than the prescription, like some kind of like a raw meat or a partially raw meat? I'm just looking for other alternatives or answers to this
Okay.
question
so,
or problem.
So quick question, Jennifer. When you say he was diagnosed with early stage kidney disease, was his blood work abnormal, or did he just have dilute urine?
It all from the blood work.
Okay. All right. So, you know, there's several stages of kidney disease in cats. The kidneys have two main jobs in the body. One is to do the water balance, and that's, you look at the urine for that. And the other is to get rid of certain waste products, and that's what you look at the blood. And in early stage kidney, they're just making dilute urine. So you get bigger spots in the litter box, they're drinking more water, their urine is more dilute because they're not recycling their water like they used to. Cats are almost a desert animal, so they usually are very good at recycling their water. So as the kidneys start to not work 100%, they start to lose more water through the kidneys. They have to drink more to keep up. once they start losing the filtering, then the blood work changes. And, you know, there's stage 1, 2, 3, and 4 in kidney disease. Stage 1 is just urine abnormality. Stage 2, 3, and 4 is when you see different changes in the blood. So if he's early stage, he could have just very mild changes in his blood work. Cats can be in that stage for a long time, years even. And they do often recommend putting them on a prescription diet. And the idea of that is you're decreasing the protein load on the kidneys because most of the waste products are protein. So you're trying to get them to not eat quite as much protein. But it's also very important for these cats to maintain their weight. So my feeling is if the cat loves the kidney diets, great. That's wonderful. It'll, you know, slow the progression of the kidney disease. But if they're not going to eat the kidney diets, they're going to go downhill quick. So in my mind, if I have a cat that won't eat kidney diet, and I had one myself, then just getting him on a good quality canned food so they don't get dehydrated is the next best thing.
Okay. So he used to eat Fancy Feast all the time.
Fancy Feast is fine.
Okay. So if I do like a mixture of the prescription diet with that food and he would eat it, then that wouldn't harm his kidneys to the extent that
nope.
he would.
Nope. As long as you're going to keep, you know, it's much more important that he keep eating at this point. You know, my cat hated kidney diet. I couldn't get him to eat any of it. And, you know, he lived to be 19 years old.
So, that's a good run.
You know, I can't promise that's going to happen with your kitty, but it's definitely more important. And there is the other option is there are other brands of kidney diet, and some cats like one over the other. So you could also try different varieties of the kidney diets and see if there is one he does like.
All right.
Okay. We've tried all the top brands, and it just doesn't seem to
if it's,
be
if it's
something
all,
you want.
Yeah, if it's all fail, then just, you know, keep him eating. That's the important thing. And keep him hydrated. Keep him drinking.
Jennifer, thanks so much for the call. I'm glad that you called. That was nice. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us. Bernadette wrote in well before the show began. My 8-year-old flat-coated retriever, Rook, has crumbly, brittle nails that crack and break, leaving the quick exposed. He's always had long quicks. I've never been able to get them to recede with frequent trimming. I just had my clippers sharpened, hoping that would help, but the nails just collapse under the pressure and break away unevenly. I've started lightly filling them and leaving them long, but he keeps, or filing them, I should say, but he keeps busting them. Most times the quick doesn't bleed, just dangles there. He eats a skin and coat formula food, and I give him a joint supplement daily. I'm planning on doing a senior blood panel at his annual physical soon. Do you think that might tell my vet anything? He has always been healthy and is still quite active. I hate not including him in play and hikes with our other dog for fear of breaking a nail. And that's from Bernadette.
Yeah, some of these dogs that have the brittle nails, a supplement with a fish oil supplement or a fatty acid supplement, a combination fatty acid supplement, will really be helpful.
Can you get just a ordinary fish oil supplement and break the tablet open with the liquid?
Yeah, the capsules, you can do that. They also make fatty acid supplements for dogs. That's a combination. The fish oil is sort of one part of the fatty acid syndrome, but if you do the combination, it's good.
Fair enough.
Better.
This is from Fred and Wine and Skill. This might be outside your wheelhouse. It might not, but we'll do it, and then we'll take a break. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us as Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number. Fred and Wine and Skill writes, just took this photo of a fox in the backyard. Much of the hair on the tail is gone except for the tip. Usually they are not out during the day. Do they hibernate? Is this fox out of hibernation early and stressed? Does it exhibit disease that could be trouble for outdoor pets? And there's the picture of the fox.
Yeah, if you have a fox that's missing hair, there's a good chance it could have mange.
Yeah.
Foxes are very prone to mange, which is contagious to your canid pets, your dogs.
Yeah.
So what happens is the fox is very itchy from the mange, and they scratch up against a tree or a stump. And then the dog comes along and smells that and goes, oh, isn't that great? And what do? They rub their face on it, and they get the mites. And that's how dogs get mange.
But cats don't get that?
No, mange is very species specific. Dog mange is dog mange, and cat mange is cat mange.
Fair enough. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us. Let's take a break, Zach the engineer, and then we will get back to the phones in earnest. 800-348-2551. We'll, of course, take your emails a little later on in the show as well. We started before the show began talking about Aaron Rodgers to the Jets, and now we're talking about the intricacies of mange. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, if a dog gets mange, how do you get rid of it?
There are several different treatments. Ivermectin is the old classic. That's one of the drugs that's in the heartworm prevention that you give your dog.
Yep.
You give it a stronger dose to treat mange. Actually, a lot of the newer flea and tick medications actually treat and prevent mange.
So it's there are mites.
They're mites. They're little bugs. Little bugs that crawl into the hair follicles and make the dog extremely itchy.
Oh, that's too bad. All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We go to Campbell Hall. And Renee, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a kitty question as well. I have a 10-year-old female. She started drinking a little more water about four months ago, and she didn't seem to be gaining any weight. She seemed to be losing weight. So I brought her, and she was also vomiting after breakfast about 3 or 4 times a week. Only after breakfast. If I fed her at 12 o'clock, the food would stay down. If I fed her at dinner, the food would stay down. It would only be for breakfast. So I took her to the vet. They did a panel. They said that she had a thyroid problem, and he gave me thyroid medicine. She's been on that for 2 weeks. Since she was a poor eater, a friend of mine who's a dog breeder suggested I give her cat formula raw food, which I started mixing in with their old canned food with some additional water. She absolutely became addicted to that, loved that food, but she just started to vomit again.
Oh boy.
My dog friend suggested I give her Pepcid. So the question is, can you give a cat Pepcid, number one? Number two, of course, I'm going to bring her, I guess, back to the vet, but could it be an issue of the raw cat food, issue of changing the diet, or more thyroid problem?
Yes. Yeah, so good question. Yes. Could it be the raw diet? Absolutely. Could it be the thyroid problem? Yeah, unfortunately. So I would try changing one thing at a time. We know she has a thyroid problem, so don't take her off her thyroid meds. I would get her back on her previous diet that you know was generally working. You know, her vomiting at that point was probably due to the thyroid problem. That's a very common side effect of having an overactive thyroid. If she continues to vomit, unfortunately, some cats, when they first go on the thyroid medication, do vomit a little more. But that often will subside once their body acclimates. And 2 weeks is not quite long enough to get fully acclimated. You want to go a good month. So I would start with getting her off of the raw food, see if that makes a difference. And then if she's still doing a little vomiting, I would, you know, go a full 4 weeks. And if she keeps vomiting at that point, then it's probably a good time to recheck her thyroid level anyway and see and check in with your doctor.
Can you give a cat Pepcid?
Oh, you can give a cat Pepcid. They tend to, you know, the average cat takes about a quarter to a half a Pepcid once a day. But I think it's more likely the food than anything else, or a slight reaction to the the methimazole, the medication she's on.
You can't give a cat Alka-Seltzer, though, right?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, and no Pepto-Bismol. Pepto-Bismol has aspirin products in it, and that's not good for cats.
Okay, Renee, you want to follow up?
Uh-huh. Just they love the raw food. I mix 50-50, and it's like drugs to them. They want more.
Yep.
But I shouldn't give it to them.
Well, I would see what happens if you stop. If the vomiting stops, they may love it, but it may not love them.
Okay. Well, Renee, good luck. So, thanks for the call. It's Pets and Vets today with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. And let's see here. We go to Rutland, Vermont. And Susan, you're on.
Hi. I have a 7-year-old active Labrador retriever. Last year, I found a lump above her front elbow, took her to the vet. We decided at the time not to do anything. So it's a year later. I'm about to take her in again. What are the procedures you would do if I brought a dog in with a lump?
Well, it depends on the lump. It's very common, especially in the retriever breed, as they get to middle age, and that to get lumps. The most common lump we see in dogs is a lipoma, which is a fatty lump under the skin. Those tend to be completely benign, and most dogs live with them. Occasionally, they keep growing. I've literally gotten them to the size of a soccer ball on a dog.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's big.
So my rule of thumb is if it's doubling and tripling in size, it's time to get rid of it.
Okay.
There are some nastier lumps, you know. So what we generally do with lumps is when we have the dog in the office, if someone has noticed a lump, we usually stick a needle in it to get some cells to see if we can determine what kind of lump it is. And if it's something like a lipoma, then it's just a wait and watch. And if it's not growing, the dog lives with it.
So that's a very simple procedure.
Oh, very simple. Yep.
How long does it take to get lab results for that?
Oh, we do it right in our office.
Oh,
our
really?
Technicians look at the cells.
Okay.
And we can usually tell within
minutes. My vet wanted to do $1,000 overnight. And it just seemed, I was hoping to do what you just described.
Yeah.
You know, kind of do a little biopsy there and find out.
Yeah, I mean, you could ask them if they can do a cytology. Some practices some practices don't do that in office, and they send it out to a lab. But it shouldn't be $1,000.
Okay.
So
I know that's kind of expensive.
Yeah, we really don't do prices like that. But Susan, thanks for the call. Good luck with the lump. You had a softball size lump on a dog.
Oh, basketball.
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 What do you do with it after you get rid of the thing?
You throw it in the garbage.
Really? Can you put it in some kind of museum?
Yeah, I had a 13-year-old lab who had this, lump, and they weren't going to do surgery because she was, 12, 13 years old, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. She got, like, sway-backed. It was so big. We took it off. The thing weighed 6 pounds.
Yikes.
She was like a puppy again when we got that off. It took a while to heal because it was a big surgery, but she did fine.
That is really interesting. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. We'll head to North Greenbush. And Hillary. Hillary, you're on.
Hello. Oh, I got to turn my radio off, don't I?
Beautiful idea. Thank you for remembering.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I didn't try. So I'm calling about my 14-year-old cat, Hitch. He was recently put on a course of steroids for what our veterinarian called sort of ropey inflamed intestines.
Mm-hmm.
He has other issues. He's asthmatic. So before this, he was on a fluticasone inhaler twice a day. And he also is on Hill's CD prescription diet for some stones in his urine. And I guess he's really difficult at the vet. And so what I wanted to understand or get some kind of idea is what's the potential progression of this? Our vet said like it could eventually be lymphoma. And also the utility of further diagnostics. She said there was some other tests we could run, like a blood test when he, was fasting to see what it really is, but he has really stressed the vet, so I don't want to do that to him when he's 14.
Yeah, so unfortunately, what you're describing is something we see relatively commonly in older cats, where They, you know, you have non-specific signs of maybe not eating good or losing some weight or maybe doing some vomiting. And the only thing you can find on physical exam is that their intestines feel a little, we call it ropey. And, you know, intestines normally feel very smooth and supple and soft. And as they become thickened, they start feeling more rubbery. And it can be a form of what we call inflammatory bowel disease, which is a term for when inflammatory cells invade the walls of the intestine and it makes them thick and it makes the intestines not absorb food well. Unfortunately, it can also be cancer because lymphoma is like inflammatory bowel disease, to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And sometimes, honestly, even a biopsy, it's hard for a pathologist to tell the difference between severe inflammatory bowel disease and lymphoma. And one of the main treatments for both is steroids or cortisone.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when we don't want to put a cat through a lot of either a biopsy or an ultrasound, or the GI panel, you're talking about the fasted blood work, we'll sometimes try them on a course of steroids, especially when you have a cat like yours who already has a steroid-responsive disease like asthma. You're kind of, killing two birds with one stone. And the hope is that you make them feel better without putting them through a lot. So especially a cat like yours, who's not a happy camper at the vet, I could see choosing, let's just give this a try and see how he does. The problem is once you put them on the steroids, trying to get a diagnosis is harder because now you're basically treating the disease. So once you have them on the steroids, if they're doing better and you do the blood test or you do the ultrasound, you're going to get a fairly normal result. So if you wanted to follow up with testing, you would probably have to take him off the steroids for a period of time and then do the testing.
Do you think that it's worthwhile or?
I guess it depends on how he's doing.
I guess that's the question.
Yeah. You know, if he seems to respond to the steroids, personally, if it was my cat, I would just, keep going with the steroids if they're helping. Then the idea
lost a little weight over the last year, that's what triggered it. But.
Yeah. And then the idea is how low can you go? The whole idea with steroids is what's the least amount you could give that's going to keep the clinical signs that were causing that would be the problem from recurring. So if you can get them down to a couple of days a week of a steroid, that's going to keep his lungs happy, going to keep his intestines happy, then he's not going to have any long-term effects from that.
All right, Hillary, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to the email shortly. But now we go to Red Hook. Don, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Don from Red Hook, as you just said.
Yes.
I have two absolutely beautiful Icelandic sheepdogs, and I love them dearly, and I've owned dogs my entire life, but there's a training issue I've got a question about. Anytime I take them in the car, they absolutely go ballistic if I put my directional on or if I step on the brakes or if I stop.
Wow.
And I'm at a loss. I'm at a complete loss of what to do.
That's weird.
Any thoughts?
So they like it when you're driving fast? They're speed demons, but they don't like it when you're going slow.
Oh, my gosh. I just thought of Fast and Furious 12, Icelandic Sheepdog Edition. Perfect.
I think it's they don't like it when they assume I'm going to stop and leave them in the car. And I take them hiking and canoeing, and they're very active dogs, as you probably already know.
Yeah.
But I'm at a loss because you can't yell at them because that just doesn't make any sense to do anyways.
No.
I have no idea what to do.
The only thing I could think of would be if you had, you'd need to have somebody else in the car with you. And have a very high value treat that they really like and praise them when they're being calm. And then as you go to do something like put the blinker on or slow down, say, sit, good dogs, quiet, and have the person give them treats and just teach them that those behaviors are what you're looking for. See if you can just slowly wean them off of it. But
I got an idea too, Don. Here's what you do. You get a nice, good old-fashioned stick shift car. You downshift when you want to slow down, and you use hand signals when you want to turn. Still legal. You'd be fine. All right. Or
that's
you can use Carrie's
idea.
I think you just need to have them learn that it's not the worst thing in the world, you know, when you're doing these behaviors, and that they need to be good, quiet, you know, dogs while this is happening.
Because I want to take them with me, but, you know, I have to consider my own hearing health as well.
Yes.
All right. Well, good luck, Don. That's a great call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. Rick is in Albany. Hello, Rick.
Hey there. Hey, I've got a 5-year-old dachshund that's been diagnosed with a herniated disc, and we're getting conflicting advice from our normal vet and a specialist as to how much to immobilize him. Obviously, we understand that the most that we can is to his benefit, but what would your advice be to how much to limit any kind of activity during the healing?
Yeah. So, you know, for those who don't know, so dachshunds are a breed that are prone to disc disease in their back or their neck. And the disc slips or explodes in worst case scenarios into the spinal cord. And it can cause varying degrees of pain and paralysis. It depends kind of how severe the dog is on how much you want to, you know, if they're showing any signs of any type of paralysis, be it full paralysis or partial paralysis, you definitely want to keep them crated as much as possible. Even if they're just painful for at least 2 to 4 weeks, no stairs. Out on the, you know, outside to go to the bathroom, back in the house, and, you know, as quiet as you can keep them. We don't want them jumping on our furniture. You don't want, you know, anything that's going to move the back, basically. You know, the specialist will say they need to be in a crate at all times. You know, a lot of times that's, you know, hard to do, but the less they can move, the better.
So, I mean, we've had some advice where keep them contained and have them use the bathroom in the same place and then clean them up. But, like, and to explain a little bit further, our boy, it is herniated. We did see the MRI. His back legs are somewhat affected. They're kind of wobbly. So I would say he's moderately impaired, I think is what they told us.
Yeah.
We end up picking him up and sending him down a lot to move him. We're worried if that's, you know, contributing to detrimental health. But we do that to take him outside to do his business. We're concerned if even that is too much.
No. So if you're going to be picking him up, that's fine. I just usually, you know, recommend sort of putting your arm underneath him so that you're supporting his back as much as possible. You don't want to sort of just pick him up by the chest and have his back legs dangling kind of thing. You know, as much as you can support him, you know, just like if you had a bad back, you wouldn't want to be moving it too much. So you want to keep them as stable as possible, set them down on the ground. Okay. Some people will use a towel sling to support their back legs to help them walk, that kind of thing.
I just went out and bought a small crate to see if we can move him with that, you know, inside and out.
Yeah.
So, all right. You've given us some reassurance that we're kind of on the right track. So I appreciate your advice.
Good. I hope he continues to improve.
Rick, thanks for the call. It's Pets and Vets today. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin joins us. 800-348-2551 is our number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. and we will check the email bag in a moment. Up and away. It's the Pets and Vets for the month, 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here from the Del Mar Animal Hospital, and let's see what we have in the email. Ooh, we got a lot here. This one is from Joseph. What's your recommendation? Oh, we touched on this earlier. What's your recommendation for cutting dog nails? Both my dogs won't put up with it more than two or three at a time, even with treats. I then used a muzzle but can't keep them from flinching in anticipation. They're Catahoula siblings and very eager to please. What's a Catahoula?
Catahoula, it's a type of, I don't know if it's considered a hound dog, Catahoula. Yeah, it's one of these like Puerto Rican breeds.
Yeah.
So, yeah, dog toenails are tough. Some dogs just hate having their nails done. I have found sometimes using a smaller nail clipper rather than the big fat dog nail clippers. I'll sometimes use a human nail clipper to just take the sharp tips off, yeah. Or even one that's made for cats. They don't seem to mind that quite as much. Other than that, it's treats and distraction and, you know, we have gotten away. We're trying our practice. We're trying to do what's called fear-free practice where we're not stressing the dogs. So,
well, how do you do that?
Well, it's a lot of treats. Sometimes we will have really nervous dogs take some happy drugs at home before they come in.
Yes.
And the idea is if they're going to fight the nail clipping, we just give up. We just don't do it.
What happens if you don't do it forever?
Some dogs, it's bad. Some dogs, it depends. Some of like the pugs and those kind of breeds, their nails can grow around into their pads. But most dogs, it's not the end of the world if their nails don't get cut. If they're brittle, they can break. So we do get some dogs that get broken toenails. But, you know, and worst case scenario, they get heavily sedated if they really need their nails cut.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is with us. This email from Erica. Lately, my Siamese cat has watery eyes. When I wipe it out, it has a reddish-brown tint. Sometimes it's crusty. Sometimes it's gooey. Sometimes after I do it, his eyes water a lot, enough to make his fur wet. He looks like he's actually crying. I feed him a food called Smalls, which is supposedly good enough for humans to eat. It's a wet food, and then he eats Purina Pro as a little dry food. Ironically, it's happened more since I have gotten a second cat. Could he be allergic to his brother? What's happening? That's from Erica.
Well, certainly, yes, there could be a bunch of things going on. My guess is he has some issues with his tear ducts, that they're not draining appropriately.
Yeah.
So everybody, human and dogs and cats, have tear ducts that drain your tears from your eyes down into your sinuses, which is why when you cry, your nose runs.
Yeah.
And some animals get blocked tear ducts, or they're not made well, so they get scarred. And so the tears have no place to go but over the face.
Yeah.
It's not unusual for cats to have brownish, reddish tears. That's can be totally normal. So it's not bleeding. It's just normal pigment in their tears. And animals have several different types of tears. They have mucousy tears. They have watery tears. So you can get a combination of stuff. So I'm guessing the cat has some blocked tear ducts. And that's unfortunately just something they kind of have to live with.
That you can't fix that.
A dog, sometimes you can flush the tear ducts under anesthesia. I've never been able to get a cannula small enough to fit in a cat's tear ducts.
Interesting. Okay, so. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, one more email for now, and then we'll hit the phones again. This one's from Mitchell. Sometimes, that's the name of my cat. Is my cat writing in?
Yeah.
Sometimes lately when my two-year-old Torty cat lays on my lap while awake, it seems like she has hiccups. There's no sound, but a persistent pattern of muscle contractions from her chest. She seems fine otherwise. Is there anything to be concerned about?
No.
No. Okay. Well,
they
would you know what
they can certainly have hiccups. It's much more common in kittens and puppies.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, animals can have hiccups. I wouldn't be worried about it.
Fair enough. Maybe the
cat's a heavy drinker.
Yeah. I also see sometimes my cats, I think when they're sleeping, they kind of get like little muscle twitches.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just either they're dreaming or whatever.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Let's go back to the phones. Clifton Park and Gusta, you're on.
Hi, doctor. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 4-year-old Wheaton Terrier who the doctor believes has a torn ACL. We're waiting on x-rays. Just curious to know any more info about torn ACLs and dogs. And I don't know. The healing kind of freaks me out a little bit because she's very active.
Yeah. So, you know, so it turns out, especially a young dog, a lot of these torn ACLs occur in young dogs because of the way they were built. So it's all about geometry. It's all about angles. And unfortunately, some dogs are born with, instead of a flat surface for their upper leg bone to ride on, it's more of a ski slope. And so over time, every time they step, the only thing holding their upper leg bone from sliding down that ski slope is the cruciate ligament. And so eventually it tears. And that makes a very unstable, painful joint. If you don't do surgery... Yeah, so if you don't do surgery, they will eventually scar, and that joint will get more stable, but it will also get very arthritic. The orthopedic surgeon that was coming to our practice for a while, unfortunately, he retired. We're very sad. But his rule of thumb was if you thought, as far as age goes, if you thought the dog had another 3 years of life, then it was very worthwhile to put the money into the surgery because they were going to be much better shape. Certainly a 4-year-old dog, yes, absolutely. Other problem, of course, is there is often a 60% or more chance that the other leg could tear. It all depends on how steep the angle is, and the surgeon will measure that angle when they do the surgery, so they can let you know what the chances are that the other leg's going to need surgery in the future, so you can start saving. But yes.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then it's unfortunately generally a 2 to 3 month recovery, a very restricted exercise, and then very, you know, slowly going back to longer walks and longer walks and all that.
Well, but, is this a purebred dog?
A Wheaton Terrier, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you follow up first,
but
and then I got
any
a question.
Any dog can get.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not breed-related,
It's not breed-related?
Not really, no.
It's not select. In other words, in nature, that would go away because that dog would not survive
right? My first dog was a mixed breed dog, and she tore both her cruciates.
Interesting. So, all right, well, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'll let our caller follow up.
That's okay. My quick question is, someone was telling me about laser, that laser really helps. Is that a thing?
It can help with healing. Absolutely. After the surgery.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Yep. What does the laser do?
It brings heat to the area, and that helps bring blood vessels and healing. It just speeds the body's healing.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
It helps
with
discomfort.
You know, we had an email from Robin, who's not happy with us right now. Wildlife myth. I'd like to dispel a myth that wildlife that appears during the day is likely ill. Many healthy wild animals are out about during the day. That includes fox and coyote, who often go about their business during daylight hours. They avoid humans. There just aren't that many of them, so you won't see them frequently. Typically, nocturnal skunks and raccoons will also move about during the day if their den is disturbed or they need to change location. Being out during the day in and of itself is not an indication of a sick animal that needs intervention.
I would agree. I didn't say him being out during the day. I just said hair loss is likely to be mange.
In fairness, Robin probably wasn't upset with us.
But that's okay.
You can't tell with the email. It seemed like maybe a bit obstreperous. Becca, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to call in with a suggestion for people who have cats and are having trouble with food, because my cat has irritable bowel syndrome and is allergic to chicken. And we went through years of just incredible trouble trying to find something she could eat. She was put on a prescription diet, and that just made things worse. She started losing her hair and getting skin problems. And then I found a food. It's a canned food called Ziwi Peak. It's Ziwi Peak. that has completely changed everything. Hmm. She isn't bleeding anymore when she goes to the bathroom. All her hair has come back. She had sores on her back, completely healed. I mean, it's just been like a miracle for us. And it's not raw food. I mean, if you are having trouble, you don't want to give your cats raw food. And I didn't want to. It was suggested. And I just didn't think it would be a good thing to do. This food has really, it comes in lamb and venison and beef. And there's also a chicken version. But she loves the lamb. And it's totally changed everything.
You don't work for the company, do you, Becca?
No, but good, I'm thinking good. About it.
All right, no, really, all right. Yeah, well,
no, I could promote it.
Yeah, I would agree. It's I had a cat who also couldn't tolerate any poultry, and trying to find cat food that does not have any poultry in it is almost impossible.
It's a nightmare.
I finally did. There's a pet store up in Albany that has a very good selection of pet foods. And I went up there and said, show me anything you have in canned food that doesn't have poultry. And I found a couple of all beef ones that she did well with. But they are very hard to find.
Yeah, Mitchell's not too crazy about the chicken either. Yeah. Maybe
even if you look, if you pick up like a can of two fish flavored cat food, if you read the ingredient list, like the third thing in is poultry byproducts. So it's very hard to find.
All right, let's go to Jane in Guilderland. Jane, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about my cat. I recently adopted a cat who's about a year and a half old, a male cat, who was neutered back in November. Well, he constantly exhibits mating behavior, though. He likes to grab my bathrobe and pretend mate with it.
Oh, that's nice.
And he also does this thing where he'll grab my arm and try to wrestle with me and do this play biting. I was wondering, number one, will he outgrow this behavior? Because I was thinking of getting him a friend, adopting another cat, but I'm concerned that he'll be trying to mate with this new cat.
Oh,
and
why don't you get him a bathrobe?
Some problems.
All right. What do you think, Gary?
Yeah. I'm wondering, do you happen to know, when you adopted him, was he with any litter mates, or was he all by himself? Do you know?
I'm not sure. He was with other cats, yes.
Okay. Because a lot of times these cats that are exhibiting sort of, you know, the behaviors are describing, they often are cats that weren't with litter mates when they were learning how to be social cats. And so they don't quite know how to do certain behaviors because they learn that as a very young kitten. So kittens that were hand raised by themselves, that were orphaned, that were found by themselves, often have more behavior issues than cats that were with their litter mates.
I never thought of that. Yeah.
He may or may not grow out. Some cats have been known to mate with certain blankets their whole life, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It seems to be a texture thing for a lot of cats. It's not harmful. It's just kind of an odd
behavior
for them.
Certainly, if it's a blanket, it might be harmful.
You know, if he's grabbing your arm, things like that, you can just redirect him, you know, try and get him to do something else, get a toy or, you know, give him some treats or something to get him off of your arm. And then he may outgrow that, but you just want to make him aware that that's not acceptable behavior. And I don't see that I don't see this would be a problem necessarily for another cat.
Okay.
But again, you never know until you introduce two cats how they're gonna get along. Yeah, but boys in general tend to accept new cats better than girl kitties.
All right, Jane.
Oh, okay. Now, would it be better to adopt another male cat?
I would say yes, and if you a younger, okay. You know, the younger the better, because then they're generally more accepting of new cats.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Jane, thanks for the call. And that's certainly a nominee for the most interesting call of the entire show. Let's go to Catherine in Half Moon. Catherine, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because we recently adopted a golden retriever puppy. She was 9 weeks old. And upon bringing her to the vet, we found out that she has Giardia. She's an intestinal parasite. And we were kind of told by our vet, you know, like, oh, just disinfect the area, But I'm just kind of curious of your take on it and how to keep her healthy, make sure it doesn't happen again, that it comes back, and how to keep myself and, you know, our daughter safe, you know, when it comes to touching the puppy and things like that while she's still sick.
Yeah. So, you know, Giardia is one of these things. It's a waterborne parasite. Back in the, you know, day, we used to call it beaver fever, drinking out of streams and things like that. So, you know, as long as you're careful cleaning up her stool, any accidents in the house or things like that, cleaning up in the yard as much as you can do. You know, it's a disgusting term of fecal oral, you know, so you have to get poop in your mouth to get this. So as long as you're careful cleaning up after her, it shouldn't be a big problem. And then the other big concern, once they've been treated for Giardia, is the testing, because they can sometimes, quote, test positive for Giardia when they don't actively have it.
How does that happen?
Well, they're testing for like an immune response to the Giardia, and then they're also looking for what are called oocysts, which are the actual eggs.
Oh.
So a positive Giardia test, on the one hand, is only really positive if they're truly seeing oocysts in the feces as well, because they do two different tests on Giardia now. So, but if once she's treated, I generally feel pretty safe around them, and then just be a little careful cleaning up her poop, which you'd want to, you know, do with a puppy anyway.
All right, Catherine, thank you. That was special. Ellen in North Adams. Ellen, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm curious. I got my cat some new treats recently. I saw the commercial. I fell for it. I thought, let's try them. The cats on the TV are going crazy for them. They must love them. And my cat right now, if she doesn't get these treats, goes crazy. She wants them. She follows me around yelling at me. She swat at me when I walk by. And it's these treats that she wants. And I was giving them to her more frequently because she wanted them. And she started throwing up. So I cut back on it, and I don't give them to her as often anymore. And she's not throwing up anymore. But for the next couple of days after she gets one of these pouches, she's a bear. She's just going after me, just yelling at me. She wants these treats. So my question is it behavioral, or do they put something in the food that makes her addicted?
Yeah, I don't know that they're truly addictive, but I had one cat that I was doing some training with that was, I called it kitty crack. I mean, these treats I was using to treat him with, he would do anything for. So I think, you know, they definitely make some cat treats that just are, the cats just love. And, you know, I mean, you also have to remember cats, the way they act. If I fed my one cat every time she screamed at me, she'd be as large as a house. Because, you know,
what's in the treats?
Well, I don't know. It's even not even treats. I mean, with my cat, it's just her cat food. Yeah. I mean, she starts screaming about dinner like 3 hours before it's due.
Cats are pigs. I think that's a fair assessment.
And so I think some of it is just they know that you gave them something really yummy, and they think if they keep asking for it, they'll get more of it.
Well, Ellen, thank you very much for the call. We have about 45 seconds left, but I took an email from a regular listener, Paul, who said, I get very irritated when you take a caller with about a minute or 45 seconds left. And so I don't want to do that. Let's talk about the Aaron Rodgers thing. No, let's not. Here's an email. Oh, it's too long to read. All right. This is... how much to feed kittens? I just adopted two bonded sibling kittens. I'm wondering how much to feed them. I've read that kittens should be fed 1 ounce of wet food per pound. Is that reasonable?
I tend to kind of give growing kittens what they want for the first few months. You know, I've never had a tiny kitten get super fat. So until they're about 4 or 5 months old, kind of let them eat what they want.
And then how much wet food should an adult cat get? From
About 5 or 6 ounces a day for the average cat.
We are done with the show. Carrie O'Loughlin, thank you for being with us.
All right.
We'll see you
soon. Great being back.
Support comes from Nathan Latour, offering individual... No. Man, I tell you what, my English language skills are dropping, which is a problem because I don't have another language. Nathan Latour, offering career opportunities at their independent hospital, nursing home, and primary care centers. nlh.org/careers. And Gloversville Sewing Center, Gloversville, New York, a quilt shop offering Bernina and Janome sewing machines. We're worth the trip. GloversvilleSewingCenter.com. Once again, thanks to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin from Del Mar Animal Hospital for being here. Thank you for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your call or your email. We do this once a month, and we'll see you next month for that one. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, who, you know, he's a little annoyed, but he's got to be here every day for every show, and that's the way it goes. And our phones were answered by Andrea Cunliffe. I'm Ray Graff. We'll see you tomorrow. And you know what's happening tomorrow? Perfect after a huge snowstorm? We'll talk about gardening.